Music provided by Armstrong. Visit armstrongofficial.com to hear more badass music.
Welcome to the TriCast Gaming Podcast.
Greetings and welcome everyone to episode number 98 of the TriCast Gaming Podcast. I am your host, Philip Grimlock-Keeney, and I'm joined tonight by Jason Neons Andrews and his fluffy orange dog who came running down the stairs right when it started.
Like right as it started, they're like wrestling with each other and
he growling. Got very excited. He just came down like a she, okay.
Yeah, and she's like right here right now, like, are you gonna pet me or just talk about me?
Yeah, she wants some love right now. Unfortunately, for sure. We're gonna do a podcast right now.
You gotta go. A little fluffy. Go girl. Go. And don't fight. She's wrestling. She likes to wrestle with my other dog.
Okay, gotcha. Well, how are you doing tonight?
Good, man. It's a Friday.
It is a Friday. Thankfully, I needed the weekend. I don't know why. You know, like, it's like the Memorial Day weekend was last weekend, and you feel like you go into the week rested, but it was just more like, oh, no, I actually have to do a week of work now after all that.
Well, right. The Memorial weekend was awesome, right? For me, the biggest thing it did is it created a short week. Mm-hmm. In a time when I have a ton going on at work. So I have all these projects that are due basically this coming week. I have to like have a ton of stuff done because the week after that is a big week for us. You know, we're having some trainees come in to Atlanta here, and I'll have 20 people coming in, and I'll run a training for them for 3 days and have to coordinate all of that. So it's a big thing. It sounds super easy, but there's like so much prep work involved in bringing people in like that and doing it. So, I like have to have everything done in the next just like couple of days or the next week. Mm. So,
yeah, I hate when I work much more productively when it's like I don't need to have this done, but I want to get it done. And so, like, I kind of go at it, and then if like you know if something comes up, it's okay, right? I hate weeks when I have stuff that has to get done because invariably every single day, half of my work day is just whatever comes up that day.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. You don't feel productive.
So it's just,
I made a comment to my boss, on Thursday that, you know, I used to think 6 months was a long time because we have I can't say too much, but we have a new product that's coming out. And we're targeting like a January release. And so we're doing all of the work that comes to get ready for all that. Right.
Yeah.
Which is massive amounts. And we're talking about coming out with that in January. And so I'm like, okay, it's June. Oh shoot. That's 6 months away. And you know, you think like, oh, it just like, I can just like before this job I'm in that I've been in for a year now, like everything I did, you know, as a sales guy, everything was real, you know, short term or like right now. Right.
Right.
And now as a director, you know, like nationally and the strategic planning of things, everything is so much more long-term focused and things are just like, how are we here already? You know what I mean? Like it just gets on you so fast.
Well, and now you know how game devs feel and can give them a break on delays. Well, I'm sure that everyone else has their own work issues that have got them down this week and they want to hear some cool nerd shit. So why don't we give the listeners what they want? Kenobi is a thing that has happened since the last time we recorded.
It is a thing and I love it. It's funny, just tonight, I got a text from my, which by the way, I need to turn off my text notification just in case that happens right now. But I got a text from my mom and she was like, just started Kenobi. And, you know, I said, yeah, it's really good. And she sent back like the like heart eyes emoji face, you know, after about, after a good while, like you could tell she maybe was into episode two or whatever.
Yeah.
It's good. I like it.
Yeah. So I think I want to do like a real spoiler cast this time for the show, like where we wait until the end of the show and we do sort of a dedicated, whether it's a dedicated episode.
You're talking about like at the end of the season, right? Like,
Yes.
All, what is it, 6 or 8 episodes?
Yeah, it's only going to be 6 episodes. Yeah. Yeah. It'll be over.
And we're halfway there.
June. Yeah. It won't take long. But I think I want to do, so I want to try doing something like that. And I want to be much more in depth about it. Like, I want to go back. I want to watch the show up front and watch it. And then I want to go back and watch each episode.
Sure.
And take some notes of some of the things that I noticed. And have like a really in-depth conversation, because I think that there is something special in this show in terms of story and what we're getting about the development of the character of Obi-Wan and the character of Leia.
Yeah.
That I think is really worth
kind of... And relationship between the two, because we knew they had one, but never knew the detail of that.
Exactly. And I think it would be really fun to explore that in a much... at a much deeper level and try our hand at something like that as a show. We haven't done anything like that, and see how it goes and see how the listeners take to it.
Well, and at some point the relationship or the character development also of Vader, right? Like,
yeah,
we're going to get some of that, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I would hope so. I mean, certainly Disney have marketed this show that there's a lot of Vader here as well as Obi-Wan. They've marketed it that way, so I would be shocked if we didn't get some of that. But I think there's a lot going on here. I think it's very interesting. I do think it has its silly points. You were messaging me in the chat, but there is one scene, and it's in episode 1. Yeah, it's in episode 1, where I was like, what the fuck are the Three Stooges doing?
Yeah.
In the Star Wars show.
Yes.
I was like, what is this clown show of a chase scene? Like,
I don't know why. All of these shows are good. Mandalorian and why these directors think they need to throw in these cheesy, corny, stupid scenes where you have someone that's like, I'm going to fight by I'm shooting, but I'm going to do this spin move and then shoot. I'm going to do this completely, totally unnecessary backflip. I'm going to waddle like a penguin while I chase this 6-year-old, you know, 10-year-old. I'm going to waddle like a penguin behind her. Like there's,
and then when a small tree branch gets in my way.
A branch that's at my nose level gets in the way. I like fidget back and forth. Like, oh no, what do I do? This, I've never seen something like this before. I must now slowly turn left and robot walk the other direction.
It was so bad. Yeah. That was glaringly bad. But those are just kind of, they're scenes that are there that I wish aren't there, but they are small things. Overall, my impression so far of the show is this is quality. This is good.
Yeah.
This is good addition to Star Wars. It's just, you know, how do they kind of stick it in the end? Because at first I was like, you know, we need to know that this means something. We need to know that what we get from it, the development of Kenobi's character and the development of Vader's character potentially, like, truly adds something. Because I think, like, when I started really kind of digesting Boba Fett at the end, is that that's where I got very disappointed. Because I feel like it was so superficial. We didn't really, like, unless you'd never read any of the books, we didn't really get anything new about Boba Fett as a character. And there was not really any, at least in my opinion.
I'm going to defend it just a little bit and just say, to me, here's what I have rationalized and where I'm at with Boba Fett. I could be wrong, but Boba Fett is a bad guy. Everything that we are told to know from a movie perspective, everything that we are told to know and, have information about Boba Fett is that he is this mercenary killer, murderer, bad guy. And they had to do what they could to set up a premise, a basis of he had a full character change. He is no longer a bad guy. And they had to set up how he has now evolved into a better person. And now he's this honor code and he's had this life experience that changed him. And now moving forward, we're going to have, you know, original Boba Fett material moving forward to be about Boba Fett, but now he's this new person. He just happens to be related of some sort, you know, has the armor essentially, but he's completely and totally a new character for all intents and purposes of what we know from the movies.
Which I mean that kind of just sort of exemplifies even more like where I'm like, this doesn't really make sense with the show and how they did it. Because, and again, like I get it. I know I consume all Star Wars and I'm the Star Wars nerd that not everybody is. But if you've watched Rebels, if you've watched some of the Clone Wars stuff, even if you paid attention in the prequel trilogy, if you read some of the books, you realize that there is a much more complex character in Boba Fett already, and you see some of his upbringing as a child and as a teenager, and you can kind of see where the shoots of what might have been inside of him all along came from, and they could have really tied into what we already had, and it could have made a much more sensical transition. Instead, what we got was a show that I personally didn't think so, Boba Fett was...
For argument's sake, I think of it in terms of long term of hopefully more of a Kevin Feige type of approach where they needed this character to be able to interweave a larger plan of what's going on with all of these new characters and new shows doing with Ahsoka and with possibly a Thrawn show and with possibly a, you know, an Ezra show and with, you know, all sorts of stuff going forward, right?
Right.
So it could be they needed him to do other things for these other shows.
Yeah. Right? And all I'm saying is that they could have gotten this character there in a way that made much more sense with all of the lore that I've seen so far.
Sure.
Than what they did. Because what they did was just like, oh, he died basically and saved himself and then was nursed back to health by this Tusken Raider tribe, and somehow from their honor he learned honor, but that's just, it's so superficial because there's so much that, like, they try to act as if there's, I mean, basically Boba Fett lives a life and then they try to act like none of the rest of that really had any effect on his transition.
Like, he didn't already have a hard life before. Like, he watched his dad get murdered in front of him.
Yeah, and, I mean, I just felt like we could have really tied into what was happening there. And then, of course, that character, that Boba Fett character, has interactions with people like Ezra, with those characters.
Right.
And so, like, it's just going to be really weird when they kind of intermingle back again, because you could have just done it in a... I'm just saying, I feel like you could have done it in a better way. And I feel like, as someone who... for the most part, loves everything that Favreau and Filoni have been doing, I feel like I also have to call it out when I think that they might have misstepped a little bit, just because I think that, you know, I can't fanboy too hard if I feel like they've done something that I'm not quite there with. Anyway, I've gone down a long path to just say, to kind of set up the fact that going into Kenobi, really what I wanted to see was, are we going to get meaningful character progression of Kenobi? Like, how does he get from one of the single most powerful Jedi in the galaxy, and certainly one of the greatest swordsmen in the galaxy, to what we see in A New Hope? And I know that A New Hope is also kind of limited by what they had at the time in terms of, you know, trying to choreograph a sword fight and everything. But I think there's deeper meaning there, in that there's a character that changed and became someone else.
Right.
And this show is going to show us kind of how he got there.
Right.
And so far I'm happy with how that's going. That's right. All of that 5 minutes of Boba Fett and everything to say that piece.
I mean, look, even with them being limited by the technology they had at the time, if you go back to the audio that was described or spoken out by Vader, I mean, he says, and I don't know the exact quote, but he does talk about, you know, you're weak, old man, and he basically disrespects him right away. He like, I can sense that you're nothing like what you used to be, you know?
Yeah.
So now we're getting the story on how he got to that point, because you're right. when the collapse happened, the last that we saw Obi-Wan, he was pretty much a badass. I mean,
yeah. Like, if you think about, like, if you try to put yourself chronologically, and again, we don't want to spoil anything here, so we got to be careful. But if you put yourself chronologically of where the show takes place, the last time, as you said, as an audience, we would have seen him at the end of episode 3.
Yeah.
Where, you know, literally two of the greatest swordsmen in the galaxy went head to head, and Obi-Wan defeated Anakin.
Yeah.
But also in defeating Anakin and in Anakin's fall, we saw Obi-Wan break completely, probably.
Right.
And that is where we are picking this character up. And again, you know, like, it's kind of just, you know, this is not really a spoiler, but kind of opening up with that opening scene of him working as a, you know, basically a butcher. He cuts meat and stuff like that. Right. And how they do that whole sequence, and he goes home, and then he goes back out, and they do that whole sequence again, almost beat for beat, shot for shot, to just show, like, how mundane Obi-Wan's life is now.
Right.
And when he's challenged by that other Jedi, and he's like, dude, you just know we lost. Like, just go home.
Oh, yeah, he folds. I mean, it's almost like a complete deletion of his character. Like, you know, I mean, like, and so, yeah, there's a lot of character development that's happening there.
So, anyway, I don't want to go any farther. That's, like, basically within the first, like, 15 minutes of episode 1, and I don't want to.
So I found it interesting when you were talking about chronologically where we're seeing this happening, where, you know, this is basically right after episode 3.
10 years, of course, to be exact.
Sure. But I found it interesting that when Star Wars released their timeline showing, like, when things happened, and they had, like, this, you can look it up online. There's like a roadmap or a timeline that shows where everything, as far as the cartoons, like Rebels and the movies, all align with one another in the timeline. And the movie Solo is happening during the exact time of Kenobi.
Oh, that's cool.
That gives you an idea of how much older Harrison Ford is, Han Solo is, than Luke and Leia. You know, he's definitely the, like, older rogue kind of guy. Because they're both 10 at this point, right?
Yeah, and I think he's what, like, somewhere in the, like, 18 to 21 range.
Yeah, he's a young 20s or something like that. So yeah, I mean, he's a good, you know, 15, you know, 20 years 10. Older than them. Whatever, somewhere in there.
I'd say probably 10 to 15, somewhere
in there. 20 would be 30, right? So he's anywhere from most likely 12 to 18 years older.
Yeah. So yeah, that is interesting. I didn't notice that they'd done that. I didn't pick up on that.
Yeah, you'll have to look it up. It's pretty cool. They show, like, the whole, like, where everything hit. And then also too, when they show that, like, they do thing in, like, space, right? So, like, where it shows Solo, it's not just like it puts it on a timeline. It, like, shows Solo and it comes to the line and branches out and says, like, when I say space, like, it basically says that the entire movie of Solo goes from this date to this date.
Oh, okay. Right?
So it's this whole section, and then where all of the overlap of other things are in comparison. And so it shows all of the shows and where they all overlap with one another.
Very cool. All right. Well, without just a couple more minutes on this one, without trying to spoil anything, I'm just going to kind of list off some characters and give me your sort of initial thoughts. Okay. I'm going to keep it to characters that we're seeing in the first two episodes, since we got those debuted back to back.
Yeah.
So we've kind of talked about Han quite a bit. Obi-Wan. You got me. You caught me there because you talked about the Solo movie. But Leia, what about the character of Leia and the little girl who plays her?
I think she's doing great. I like that she's, I mean, clearly spirited, right?
Yes.
Feels like Leia. You know what I mean? Yes. Like, you're like, yeah, I could totally see a 10-year-old Leia.
Yeah,
exactly. Rebellious and adventurous and curious, right? Like, so it feels spot on. It feels good.
I have to say, I feel like she is borderline my favorite character so far of what I'm seeing.
So I'll just real quick. I saw an interview with her and they were talking, and she's like, you know, it's one of those that she's a kid, right? And she's the same kind of little bubbly personality in her interview. She's, you know, I mean, it's just like, it's just so natural for her because that's who this person is.
Right. But I love how they, not only is she that sort of, like you said, that bubbly sort of that kid that, you know, she's got the fire and everything. Yeah. Right. But I love also how intelligent she is.
Yeah.
And I know some people are commenting on this as if it's wrong. I totally disagree. I think that, you know, you're talking about a character who has a doctorate degree by like 16 years old or something, canonically, and is a senator by 18.
Right.
You know, this child at 10 years old, who's obviously force sensitive. We know she's force sensitive. Correct.
She's force sensitive. And
she doesn't realize it.
Well, but I think she displayed it already. I think she was sensing emotions of people and called them out on it.
I agree. I don't think she realizes that forced, right?
Right. She just thinks she's just being intuitive.
Right. But that's what I actually really like that about this character is you've got this mix of a child, but also somewhat intelligence beyond her years. And I think it makes for a really interesting character.
Yeah.
And I think it's spot on with how I would envision a young Leia to be. So that's all I had to say on that. What about the Inquisitor? So we've got early on, we get a scene with the Grand Inquisitor and then he's got three of his sub Inquisitors with him. The second brother, the third sister and the seventh sister or ninth sister. I can't remember which one. There's a third one, an inconsequential Inquisitor. What did you think of the Inquisitor so far?
You know, they've got the Inquisitors, you know, feel like they do in the cartoons and that they're menacing and they're powerful. And they're angry, right? Like they are very, very menacing, right? Like at all times, they're just angry at everyone and everything. And they're even angry with each other, right? They're just like constantly pissed at everything. They're backstabby and they're, you know, exactly what you would expect Inquisitors to be. And I love that they're bringing them in to the show, and that essentially Inquisitors, you know, the best way to explain it and put it is Inquisitors are almost invented by Vader, right? Because they even specifically say, like, you know, that they're, you know, your Inquisitors or whatever, I think is a line at some point. Like they're full on Vader's project of, you know, these force sensitive beings that are out to hunt and finish the job of, you know, of killing off Jedis, because that's the only thing that they exist for. They are Jedi hunters, right?
Like, that's right. Yeah. I love that scene that we get in, again, it's like within the opening 10 minutes or something of the first episode, where they come into the saloon. I love that scene. The Grand Inquisitor gives me like sincere vibes of that. I'm trying to remember what the German colonel or whatever he was in Inglorious Bastards.
Yes.
It gives me serious vibes of him, and I love that. I think it's really, really well done. In particular, the character of the third sister, Reva, has gotten a lot of discussion online. How do you feel about her character?
I think I know where they're going, and I don't know how much I can talk about that without spoiling things.
Sure.
But I think I know where they're going with her. So far, I really like it. You know, it's unfortunate. I'll say that, you know, for whatever reason, Star Wars has this huge fan base that is like, by no secret at this point, extremely freaking racist. And she's getting a crap ton of hate online because she's a black character. And so the show is being review bombed, by the way, entirely because of her presence. So it's so stupid.
I wonder,
she's doing well.
Sometimes I wonder. I don't know. Sometimes I wonder how much of that is bot generated and a small number. Because
there's someone or some people that are Star Wars junkies who like they are absolutely racist and they bombed because of Finn. They bombed, you know, because of Rose, right? And now they're bombing because of
it's really interesting though that like you picked characters that actually like Finn like conceptually is such a cool idea, and then they totally fucked his character.
They did. Right?
Rose isn't even conceptually an interesting character, and they also fucked her character because the way they made her go down.
Right.
So it's like you're and this is where like you have to be careful. You have to be careful how you navigate. What's the word I'm looking for? Like criticism or critique of the show and a character from, you know, and obviously I saw some of the stuff that was getting posted and it's, you know, it is absurd. But again, I always just wonder because like I remember last summer when England lost in the Euro Championship final and they had the three black players that missed penalties.
Right.
And they got tons and tons of hate. And there was this report that came out. They did this whole study later on, like a month later, and they found that like 85% or 90% of the posts that were actually like bots. Bad posts were like from accounts that were located in like Africa and the Middle East and in like in Russia. And I'm like, well, that's really interesting. And there's only like 10% of them that were like actually English accounts of people that were probably real people like saying stuff that they shouldn't have. And so I always get interested in like how much of the social media is actually a reflection of real life fan base. But regardless, my opinion of the character. I think that actually she's kind of really spot on, like you said, of characters that are angry, that are backstabby, that they really kind of exemplify what I would expect
they feel to do. They feel Inquisitors are perfect for what they are because essentially they blame they're hunting Jedis because they blame Jedis for what has happened to them in their life.
Yeah.
The strife and struggles that they have had, they feel are the fault of Jedis. That Jedis failed them. And so, you know, the Emperor and Vader or whoever has convinced them that they should be out there to seek their revenge to make it right. You know what I mean? Yep. And they're all in on that.
I mean, 100%. I see a lot of, in her and her demeanor, I see a lot of reflection of young Anakin, right?
Sure.
And the failures in Anakin's life and the hate that that came up inside of him and how he tried to push to control that. I see a lot of that in her character, and I like it so far. So I just want to, you know, kind of say that. So, all right. Well, we spent a ton of time talking about a show that I say I want to actually properly deep dive and spoil one day.
But we say it like dodging around it. Like, so it's probably not good content.
Well, you know, I don't know. I think they were interesting thoughts, and they are our initial thoughts of what we've seen so far. And so hopefully someone gleaned something out of that. Something. You know what I'm saying?
You're saying something.
Yeah, I'm saying, all right. Well, now that I've danced enough, should we talk about some video games? All right, because you know what? Each and every week, we do get together to channel our virtues through the Triforce to provide you, the listener, all the hottest topics from the mythical world of video games. We also add in as much of our colorful thoughts and fill up monologues as you can handle in a week, simply because we love video games and discussing them. If you like what you hear, please consider subscribing on your podcasting app of choice. If you really enjoy it, please share on social media or directly with your friends. This show continues to grow thanks to all of your wonderful support. You can find us on Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram, all at TriCast Gaming P1, and on our website, TriCastGamingPodcast.com. DM us on any platform with your questions, and we'd be happy to share them on the show. All right, no corrections, but a couple of announcements, I guess, to make. Number one, we are going to permanently move recording of the show to Friday nights. It seems to just consistently work better with our schedule, gives us more opportunity to write the show and come together and kind of understand the content that we're going to discuss in the show.
There's a lot of announcements of things on Thursdays.
A lot. And it's very hard to digest it all and then try to immediately kind of spew out thoughts on it. So we're going to permanently move recording of the show to Friday nights. Obviously, starting this week, we are recording on a Friday night. If you're getting this, it's not popping up into your feeds until Saturday. That's just kind of be how we approach it. I think most people probably look to this on their Monday morning commute anyway. I don't think it's going to drive too much change for the individual listener, but obviously, if you're
going to get a bunch of bot generated hate mail.
Yeah, maybe so. But obviously, if you have any thoughts or concerns about this and you want to share them, please do write into us and let us know. If you just insist that it needs to be on Thursdays, we will absolutely listen to you. Number two, you were asking me before the show about the top 20 game list. Yep. And how we should view it. So I guess I wanted to kind of allow a conversation to happen because maybe I wasn't clear last week. So my thought and how I've been viewing this is it is our 20 favorite games. It's not the best games. It's not trying to find what is some kind of objective list of the 20 greatest games of all time or something. This is meant to be a reflection of us as show hosts, what our interests were, what we grew up with, and what we enjoyed. And so obviously that means that, you know, unfortunately, I've never actually played Red Dead Redemption 2. I recognize that Red Dead Redemption 2 is probably one of the greatest games, and I should go play it, but I haven't. So how can I put it on a list of my top 20 favorite games, right? So things like that. That's how I view it. But Jason, of course, I'm interested in your thought if you feel like we should go a different direction.
I do have thoughts. It's mostly thoughts of extreme disappointment that you have not played Red Dead Redemption 2. You know, I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
Okay. Just well, disappointed. You know, I can't help you there.
Also, Days Gone. You know, what a loser.
I'm just totally failing.
You are. And you love those kinds of games. I don't know why you haven't played.
Great question.
Anyway, so, Hey, look in the chat. I don't want to say it if we're not prepared to say that, but that's the news. The chat of our Zencaster.
Yeah, I see that. Well, I mean, what's your thought on the show, I guess, just in general, in terms of the top 20 list?
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Stay focused on one thing first.
So I personally think it should be what are your favorite games? Not what are the best games. As an example of what I gave to you, I'll just say, for instance, GoldenEye. I love GoldenEye from old Nintendo 64. Do I believe it's one of the greatest games ever made? No. Do I believe, when I say greatest, we're talking like best quality, super in depth, etc. No. But is it going to be in my top 20 list? Damn right it will.
Yeah.
So to me, that's interesting. Like, what are the games that have affected and had an influence on my gaming life and a rank of that? Like, the things that I enjoyed playing the most, that helps to tell the story of me as a gamer, right?
Yeah. 100%.
And I think that will do that for each of us. Same with the listener, what they've submit.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. So it sounds like we're in agreement that's the way we want to approach this. It's not what are the greatest games of all time. It is what are our favorite games of our gaming lives to date.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how we will approach the list. I will obviously skew my list to put all the PlayStation games at the top to
sure
force them on.
Sure to remember, I was a PlayStation guy all the way until Xbox One.
That's true. No, absolutely. It should be that should be in that way. And maybe after the show over time, maybe we can do something where we kind of get our own list out individually over time so that, our list in whole can be out there for the listeners to hear. So, all right. Sounds like we're in agreement. Let's get on into games.
Yep.
And what we are playing. So for me this week, obviously, Destiny 2 and Ghost Recon Tokyo. If you've been listening so far up to this point, you know that's what I've been playing for a while. So I'll start with Ghostwire because I did finish it. I finished it on Monday night. Got my platinum trophy in it, platinum number 36. I really, really enjoy this game. There is something much deeper to the story than I ever expected. It comes in like the last 5 hours of the game. And I was kind of really surprised how much of a deeper meaning was in this story, because up to that point, it was pretty like, almost anime cheesy level type stuff, which I thought was enjoyable and I was having a good time with it, but I was like, yeah, this is pretty superficial. And then like it gets right to the very end and it's like, oh shit, there's like a really deep story and a really deep meaning to what is happening here. And then you start, it got me kind of looking at some of the other collectibles and stuff like that in the game. And I started looking at a lot of the descriptions of the enemies, and those are really interesting too. Each of the enemies is actually modeled to reflect an observed fault, I guess, in Japanese culture or society. So like, you know, they are meant to represent like a businessman who is not really enjoying his job, but you know, the cultural honor system suggests that he just goes to work and does what he needs to do and doesn't say anything and just kind of lives his life, even though he's unhappy. And the descriptions kind of really kind of touch on that. And I was like, whoa, there's like, obviously I don't get it as much. I'm not Japanese. I think if you right. are Japanese and you know that culture, I think there's probably a lot more there to it. But it just kind of shocked me a little bit right there at the end that I guess I really wasn't understanding how much more was in this story and how it's a reflection on not only individual characteristics and how you live your life and whatnot, but also in how the Japanese people and the Japanese culture views life and existence and what is honor and what is all of these things and how maybe it could be viewed differently. So I was really surprised by that with the story at the end. So that was really, really awesome. There's really cool boss fights at the end. Now, because I did everything up to that point, they went really fast for me and I've probably ruined a couple games recently. Because I've been overpowered for final boss fights. But the character design is really cool of some of those final bosses. Really kind of evoked some of the like Bloodborne. There was definitely some imagery there from Bloodborne, which is another Japanese studio developed game. But I really like that. It's really good. And it was right at 50 hours. I did everything, platinum the game, cleared all side quests, collected everything right at 50 hours, which is such a great length to me for an open world game. That's right in the sweet spot. Yeah, I really enjoy this game. This is my favorite game of 2022 so far. I'm going to go ahead and give it 4 tryhards. I really think that this is an excellent game and it really does deserve your gaming time. I don't think it's getting much and it's really kind of sad. I don't think it's selling well. I don't think it's getting much attention. I think it might be a little bit of a victim of, you know, how Bethesda signed this marketing deal with PlayStation, but then Bethesda sold themselves to Microsoft and then PlayStation just kind of like, well, they just kind of shit the games out, you know, Deathloop and Ghostwire. And
right.
It's a little bit unfortunate, but I think it's really good. And I think that's all I'm going to say about it for now. And then Destiny 2, I'm just kind of going forward with the new season content, enjoying that, enjoying the story of Crow and how he's developing as a character. I love the idea of like kind of adding story with your seasonal content. I've not really seen a game do that before. I'm not saying others haven't done it. I just not a game that I've played. So I really like that idea.
I can tell you, I have a bunch of friends who are really into Destiny 2 right now with the new changes. It seems like it's getting, overall extremely positive reviews.
So just having a lot of fun with that and really diving deep into that. So now that I'm finished Ghostwire, I've got, you know, some kind of, you know, sort of a PSA announcement. What is Philip gonna do next? And Jason, I think you might be happy when I tell you what I'm gonna do next. So I need a palate cleanser because I played 2 open world games back to back. So I went and bought Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War. It should be about an 8-hour first-person shooter campaign. I'm going to play that, and then I'm going to go into Days Gone. I'm going to do it. I've left him speechless, I feel like.
It's funny.
Now he's getting nervous.
I'm torn. Because clearly I've been on you about Days Gone, but I had forgotten that you've not played Red Dead Redemption 2, which I think is better. I love Days Gone, but Red Dead is better. Red Dead Redemption is so good.
Don't even fret your mind. It's not Red Dead is not an option. I'm not going to play it right now.
It's
I don't want to.
I'm not going to play it right now. When did that game come out?
2018.
Red Dead Redemption 2.
I believe it was 2018.
Release date. It came out October 2018. So it has been, you know, 3.5 years. Yeah. If it's not going to happen right now, when exactly do you think this game is going to happen?
So this happened to me with Red. Yes. And so this happened to me with Red Dead 1, where I was like, not interested. And then just one Christmas break, I watched a Western movie or something like that. Mm-hmm, and I was like, fuck, I need a Western game. And I just jumped into it and I played it. And so I feel like that's what's going to happen. I personally, it just the Western vibe is not something that draws me as much. And so like I recognize that there's a superb game there. I recognize that I need to play this game eventually. It's just I have to be in the right mood to jump into that vibe.
I can feel you. I get that.
And I've been adamant for so long that I need to play Days Gone and Ghost of Tsushima and catch up on those two PlayStation exclusives. Well, and Days Gone
is a, PlayStation exclusive. So, it is definitely in your wheelhouse. You absolutely definitely should play it specifically so you can get a feel for, like, how good this game was and how successful it was with their sales and how weird it is that PlayStation has bailed on it. Like, it's just this freaking weird, man.
Yeah. No, I'm interested because I've seen people like absolutely dog it, and then I've seen people like you and people on podcasts that I absolutely respect their opinion that are like, no, this game is really good. So I'm like, okay, I'm really intrigued to see where it's gonna fall for me. So yeah, that is my plan right now. I'm gonna play Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War. All
right.
And then I'm gonna hit Days Gone. So that's what's next up for me. Jason, what have you been playing? Oh, I asked him that right as he put some...
Right as I put an Oreo in my mouth.
You know, I had to do this to you because nobody else understands that I have to watch you eat all fucking show. And so I called you out right here in the middle of it.
I eat constantly. I snack constantly.
Yeah.
So, I've been playing a lot of Fortnite. Me and some buddies have been playing most nights on some Fortnite. I have played a little bit of Rocket League with Mike and with buddy Dark, but mostly Fortnite. They've basically made it permanent now, the zero build mode, so it's essentially just a battle royale that is like all the others, the Call of Duties and it's a battle royale, right? Just right. In the more kind of cartoony graphics of Fortnite. Right. And we've been having a lot of fun with it. Anyway, just been playing a lot of that. Nothing too crazy to speak about. It's been fun. I will tell you, I did download today on the Diablo Immortal PC, which is open beta right now on PC. Mm-hmm. And I was reluctant at first. I've been one of the ones that totally trashed Blizzard over this whole mobile thing. They wised up and released it at the same time on PC, right? The PC version is beta. And so I downloaded it earlier today. I have played just enough of it to do my character creation and go through like the first mini boss that you get to. And I just picked up a barbarian because it's just like it's a hack and slash. I'll just try it out, see how it is. Here's what I'll say so far about it. From what I can tell so far, as far as the PC goes, maybe it took a ton of development because it was the phone, right? Mobile. But as far as the PC goes, it's a full dumbed down rewash version of Diablo 3. Like, I mean, the exact same sounds, the exact same exact same sounds, background sounds, like when you click on something, the way that, like, they literally took the exact same sound files from Diablo 3 and just uploaded them into this game for like a billion things. But it's just things like the graphics are not as good, right? It's not that they're bad, but they're not as good as Diablo 3 because it's a PC game. It's not like they like ramp up the graphics way better because it's hitting PC. It's just now the controls are, I'm moving with WASD instead of like my thumb on a screen, right?
Right.
But I will definitely play it. It will be something that I'll probably enjoy because I love the Diablo series or franchise. But it definitely feels like a weaker version of Diablo 3 on PC at this point. I'll immediately create a new character, and I'll probably go as like a wizard or something, a necromancer. The one thing I will say that I haven't played it on mobile, so I don't know. I'm assuming everything that I'm seeing on PC exists on mobile. In fact, when I loaded the game up right off the bat, it pops up and goes, "Have you played on mobile yet?" And I'm like, "No." And they're like, "Are you sure?" You know, basically like, if you've played on mobile, we could, you know, let us know, we'll get all the details and we'll bring your character over. But if you've already played on, you know, mobile and then you start over here without connecting the two, you're not going to be able to connect them after that.
Right.
And so I'm assuming everything I'm seeing is available on the mobile version. And if that's the case, I'll tell you, the character creation is legit. It is, you know, like, Elden Ring quality, you know, Fallout 4, you know, like these where they create people and it's just like really, really, intense character creation. To have that on a mobile game is pretty damn impressive. I'll say that. So it's got very deep, character customization, which I was impressed by. But outside that, the actual gameplay to this point feels like a dumbed down Diablo 3. And we'll see. So,
yeah, no, that's, I've been thinking about downloading it myself. I'll probably download it on mobile though. I have one of the Razer Backbone controllers.
Yeah.
So it kind of turns it into a Switch effectively. Yep. That way I'm not like trying to touch my screen and play. I hate that. Blocking half the screens with your thumbs. I probably will download it and give it a try. I have only played Diablo 3. I played it once, played through the campaign. So I'm not a big Diablo fan. You played it on
console, right?
No, I played it on PC.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. No, I played it on PC with Mike and Tyler, actually. We played through the campaign together.
Yeah. I'm just out of curiosity, what character were you? What kind of?
I was the, I'm going to have to look at them probably to remember.
There was Demon Hunter. There's Crusader.
I think it was a Demon Hunter.
Mike was always a Demon Hunter, the like bow and arrow kind of character.
What I remember it always thinking was that the Necromancer looked really cool and I wanted to be
Necromancer. The Necromancer was from an expansion, which I definitely had.
And so like I played it before that they ever added the Necromancer.
Yeah.
And I was pretty disappointed with that. Yeah, I was the Demon Hunter.
Yeah, I had I would say, so my top characters, I had a pretty maxed out Barbarian, maxed out. So I had three characters that were top notch. So I had a maxed out Barbarian, a maxed out, I can't even remember what it was called now, Witch Doctor, and a maxed out Monk. And by far my Monk was, my favorite character to play, of that group. So I'm trying to do something different this time around. So I'll probably go Necromancer this time. I started with the Barbarian just because it was quick, easy. I knew it was just going to be hack and slash and easy to kind of determine whether I thought the quality of this game was going to be good or not. So, but I mean, it also feels a lot like the, you know, it's got that, what is it? Lost Ark that just recently came out and is still, I think it's the most, I think it's still the top played game right now on Steam is Lost Ark.
Oh, wow. You know?
I didn't particularly like Lost Ark, but it definitely has that kind of feel as far as like, you know, when you're pressing buttons and doing stuff, like how it like displays them like on the map, and it feels more Lost Ark-y than it does Diablo, right? It's just not as fine-tuned as Diablo 3, which was fully made and released for PC.
Right.
It feels more Lost Ark-y.
I mean, this is supposed to be somewhat of an interstitial thing. It was supposed to try to branch out to the mobile market,
right,
try to capture people that are playing games like Legends of Runeterra and things uh-huh. like that. So, I mean, you know, I guess take it for what it is and see mm-hmm. how it turns out to be. Sure. I saw someone on Twitter basically say that they actually thought that Diablo Immortal wasn't too bad, but really all it was doing was making them want to go back and play Diablo 3.
Well, yeah, as I said, it's just it's kind of a dumbed down version of Diablo 3, so I could see that.
Yeah.
It was just worth shooting out just in case someone doesn't know. It is free, right? It's a free game.
So go try it out.
I have seen some stuff that says it's not pay to win, but it's close, right? Like, and I don't know the exacts of it. I think there's like, you can pay for these gems that give you like extremely high increased chances of the top gear, right? Like,
yeah. I think it'll be important to get into the end game, and that's where you'll probably right. see whether or not it's truly. Yeah.
I'm all about like a League of Legends where the only real money is like skins, right? Like if it is, I mean, Fortnite, like you can spend tons of money. The only thing it changes is how you look, and I'll spend money to look cool in games all day. But as soon as a game turns into, you know, like the Blizzard version of their card game, I can't think of what it's called, like the second Hearthstone, is right, very okay. pay to win. Like if you don't pay for the top cards and top decks, you don't stand a chance.
Right.
It is well known as being pay to win. And I'm not going to play the games that are the people who are good or people who spend the most money. Like I'm just not going to do it. So if this turns into that, I'll be out.
Yeah, for sure. And that's how we got to hold these people to account for mm-hmm. this kind of stuff. So, all right. Well, anything else to say before we move on into the rest of the show?
Nope.
All right. Well, so topic of the show was meant to be this week a discussion of our sort of predictions or whatever of the shows that are coming up next week. We've got the Summer Game Fest show next Thursday night, and then the Xbox Bethesda showcase a week from Sunday. So that's what it was supposed to be. In thinking about that later on, I was like, I have no idea how to even predict what will happen this year. Mm-hmm. I feel like this is the first year going into these shows that I'm going to be surprised pretty much whatever we get, because we know so little about what's happening in the second half of this year.
Right.
We've seen a lot of stuff that's already been announced get delayed out right. of the second half of this year. And then the stuff that we kind of know about, like the Call of Duty and the Gotham Knights, we've already kind of got reveals for.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really unsure what to expect. That said, we do know that there are not going to be, you know, individual shows from like Ubisoft
right.
or Capcom or right. and a second, actually, we're going to get into Capcom because they were very heavily featured in PlayStation's State of Play today or yesterday. But we know that those bigger third-party publishers are not going to have their own show. Square Enix is another one. So I think we're going to see a lot of third-party stuff sprinkled throughout these shows across the next week. That's one prediction that I guess is probably fairly obvious, but I'm just going to go ahead and throw that out there. And I think that's going to help make the shows a little bit more exciting, because we're going to see what we're going to get for the rest of this year. So like I'm really hopeful that Avatar shows up in some meaningful way in one of these shows, probably the Summer Game Fest. We've already seen Harry Potter, the Hogwarts game. Maybe we'll see that again. You know, Call of Duty has got to show up somewhere, although I think they're going to do their own show next week. So maybe they won't be in one of the big showcases. But, you know, I'm hopeful that we kind of see what our big AAA third-party releases are going to be for this fall. I hope that they show up in a meaningful way. I think I saw something about Gotham Knights will be at the the Summer Game Fest show. Yeah, Warner Bros. Is listed as a partner for them, so I think we'll see that game next week as well. On the other side, on the sort of Xbox Bethesda side, I guess what I'll kind of throw out there is I think that Xbox do have a game or two for this fall, and we just don't know about it yet. If I was going to take a shot at it, I think it's very obvious, to me at least, that Forza Motorsport is going to be one of those. I think it's going to be ready for this fall. I think it's going to be more of a platform game that they want to build on, similar to Halo Infinite. Yeah. And I think they're going to get it out this fall, and we'll see that revealed at the Xbox Showcase. And if I'm going to take a wild shot at the second game, I think it's about time for Hellblade 2. And I have that's going to be my wild shot, that Hellblade 2 might actually be coming out this fall. And that's Xbox's big game at the showcase. And that's their big game for this fall.
Okay.
So there you go. There you have it. That's my quick predictions or thoughts on what we might see. But really what I'm telling you is I have no freaking clue. I started looking around for some rumors, and it seems like most of the industry doesn't really have a clue, which is kind of exciting, because normally we go into these knowing quite a bit about what's going to happen. Jason, do you have anything on this one?
Nope. I don't have a thought on something that could be released until, I don't have like an inside scoop on something that's coming. So I'm excited for the shows to hear, but I don't have like a prediction.
Yeah. I mean, for me, for the most part, I think Xbox has to bring something. They have to show that there is still a lot of excitement that should be in the brand right now. And so I'll be really intrigued to see how they try to achieve that with their show this year. I'm really rooting for them. Because I think it's been a rough couple months for them with the delays of Redfall and Starfield, and the way the Halo show has gone, and the way Halo Infinite's post-launch content has gone. So I'm really rooting for them that this show can be a positive turn for them from a perception perspective in terms of what they're putting out. But, all right, well, let's get into the news, because there's quite a bit of it. So number one, gamers retreated to PlayStation's latest State of Play showcase this week, which focused on third-party announcements as well as some of PSVR2's opening slate of games. Jason, I want to kind of just quickly touch on this. The key standout games I've got, I think we'll touch in more detail later in the show. So I really just kind of want to, did you watch the show?
Yep.
What did you think? Kind of your just general thoughts on this State of Play.
I thought it was good. I mean, it was a short show, so it wasn't long. It was short and sweet.
30 minutes.
Yeah. Short and sweet, but had some good, good quality info. It wasn't like crazily over entertaining or have a lot of big fanfare. I thought it was just like a good informative, like boom, 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 like clap, excited. Kind of show, right? Like it wasn't super commercial filled, like what a bunch of these have had to do for their little independence. It wasn't nearly as, it felt like we got just as much information as we did like the last Nintendo show in like a quarter of the time.
Yeah.
Right. Like,
yeah, it did feel like it moved quick. It was very tight, like you said. And they put a lot of stuff in here. I want to say there was like 15 or 16 games in a 30-minute show. So, you can see that it was, really kind of putting information out there for you quickly and concisely.
I mean, it's like every 2 minutes they announce something. And show trailers in the middle of that. So they were pumping through it. I'm telling you, it was fast and furious.
Yeah. But I thought there was a lot of good stuff here. They open with Resident Evil 4 Remake, which is kind of gaming's worst kept secret at this point, so we kind of all knew it existed, but now it's officially announced. And then they ended with Final Fantasy 16, which was a game we already knew was coming, but this was the first real kind of big show of it. So I thought those were pretty big bangers to open and close a show with. I know they're third party games, but Final Fantasy 16 obviously will be a launch exclusive for PS5. In the middle, we got some PSVR 2 stuff, which was really interesting.
Got some PC specific stuff.
Yeah,
for PlayStation.
Yeah, so Spider-Man getting announced to move to PC. There was a lot in here. I mean, very few of these games are truly PlayStation exclusives. So there was a lot in here for even Xbox gamers and PC gamers. So, Yeah, I think if you didn't check it out, it's definitely worth going and seeing what was in that show.
So we'll touch on it in a little bit. I'll just say there was one thing when I watched the show, I was like, oh, cool, wow. And then later on, I found out additional details that made me go, well, that's shitty.
Oh,
but anyway, okay. We'll get to that.
Okay, we'll get to that. All right. Well, yeah sure.
Let's. My original thought was excitement. And after I found out my additional detail, I was like, oh, yeah, I really don't like that. So anyway.
Interesting. Okay, so it's one of them that I do have a write-up for later in the show.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll save that for then. I guess the only thing I'll kind of last kind of little thing I'll say about this is that this was actually a quality state of play, in my opinion, in terms of the announcements that we got and the interest in some of the games that we were shown. And this is kind of what I wish more of Sony's state of plays were like. And of course, they might have some issues going forward, because now they might have raised the bar in terms of what to expect at their shows. And certainly none of their shows up to this point have actually met that bar until now. So it'd be interesting to see how they address the state of play going forward, if they realize that it needs to have a little bit more pop like this one did.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on into news item number two. Jeff Keighley has revealed the partner lineup for Summer Game Fest 2022, with over 30 companies set to participate, including the likes of 2K, Activision, Capcom, Devolver Digital, EA, Epic Games will be there. PlayStation is anticipated to be there. They were listed. Sega, Square Enix, even Steam and Warner Bros. And Xbox are all slated to be a part of the Summer Game Fest show.
New E3.
Yeah, it does really kind of feel that way. And that's cool.
This has replaced it. Jeff Keighley took advantage, and good for him.
Yeah, and that's exactly kind of what we said last week we felt was happening. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it'd be really interesting to see the show. They started kind of leaking some of the stuff out there. So, like Callisto, which was shown at the State of Play, they've kind of announced that they're going to have something at the Summer Game Fest as well next week. Like I said, Gotham Knights, I think I saw.
By the way, Netflix was also included in the partners here, because, as you know, Netflix is going into some gaming too.
I have a suspicion that this might be focused more on some of their shows that they're doing, because done that in the past.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, again, Netflix is also in gaming, so I wouldn't put it out of the... Yes.
Stranger Things, whatever.
I don't know.
Yeah, we'll be interested to see what they have to say during all of this. Of course, Netflix Geeked Week is also coming up very soon. Mm-hmm. Have you ever watched their Geek Week stuff?
No.
Yeah, so that's where they announce a lot of their... they're kind of more gaming. Actually, that's actually going on right now. I wasn't even paying attention. Yeah, so it started on May 31st. So they're announcing a lot of their shows that are coming up in the future for Netflix. For those of you that need a reminder, Summer Game Fest will offer what they call a, quote, live cross-industry showcase, end quote, event on June 9th. So that will be this coming Thursday, and that will air at 1 p.m. Central, 2 p.m. Eastern time, and it promises to showcase what they say is, quote, what's next in gaming, with huge new game announcements, world premiere, special guests, and much more, end quote.
This is definitely like an entertainment show, right? Like, this will have very large entertainment value to it.
I suspect so, if it's anything like the... Game Awards.
Yep.
But as long as we get some announcements and some cool video game trailers, I'll be okay with that.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on. Number three. It seems that people just cannot move away from Xbox Game Pass when talking about the new PlayStation Plus revamp. And a recent investor Q&A, PlayStation's Jim Ryan was once again asked about comparisons to Xbox's service and whether launching first-party games there day one is something the company has looked at. During the briefing, Ryan dismissed day one PS Plus launches, once again pointing to the quality of PlayStation's exclusive lineup. Quote, "We are in a virtuous cycle where success has allowed investment, which has generated more success, which is allowing us to invest more and will hopefully generate yet more success. That virtuous cycle, we feel that if we were to move to a different model, which involved putting our AAA games into a subscription service on day one, we feel that there is a significant risk that the virtuous cycle that we've established so successfully would be compromised and potentially broken. We definitely feel that this is not in the best interest of the PlayStation gamer. That is our view on that particular issue," end quote. We've addressed this before. We've talked about this several times.
He said the same thing that he said before. The exact same thing in slightly different words. It's the exact same quote, basically.
Which I don't necessarily mind. I mean, that's consistent messaging from him. So at least he's consistent. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, is there more to say to this? I feel like I have somewhat of a differing opinion, maybe, but I'm interested to see what your take is.
Which is, you know, again, we've gone on this whole thing, like the whole, basically, you know, you have to be careful because what you're saying is that we make better games than Xbox or et cetera, right? Like he's just flat out saying that as a whole, right?
Right.
So you have to be a little careful there. Two, I find it interesting, and I'm now going to talk about what I was talking about before, which is going to cut us ahead a little bit to something that's later on, but I can't not talk about it because of this. So he's straight up sitting here saying, we can't day one release our titles because they are success begets success and, you know, they won't be good quality. And, you know, like if we want to continue to make quality, we can't possibly take our games and it doesn't make financial sense for us to release them day one, but we'll sure as hell do it to other people's games. Announcing Stray day one release, day one on the PlayStation Plus. We didn't make it. So who gives a shit about your game? We'll do it to you, but don't take our money. We can't do it. But hey, we're all about other people doing it. So if you guys want to give us games to throw out day one, we will do that to make it seem like we do have day one games. So that part pissed me off. I was originally like excited, like, oh, day one or Stray looks kind of cool. It's different. It's unique. Oh, and it's a day one. Look at that. Sony's just doing a day one. And then I find out, okay, wait, now he said that. Let me do a background research a little bit. Because the trailer, if you go back and watch the trailer for Stray, it pops up PlayStation, shows the Stray logo, goes through the trailer. At the end, pops up PlayStation, goes away. Never says who the developer is. No logo, nothing. It makes you feel like it's a PlayStation game. It is not developed and made by PlayStation.
I didn't notice that.
Go watch it again. Like, you can just mute. Click the start. Obviously, you can fast forward all the way to the very end again to where it stops with the whole... At no point does it ever show a logo that's not PlayStation. Ever.
So it's being developed by a studio called Blue 12 Studio. Uh-huh. And it's being published by Annapurna Interactive. So this is not even necessarily PlayStation at all.
Mm-mm.
The game, though, is scheduled to only release on PC and PlayStation consoles.
Correct.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting.
Like when I watched it during the PlayStation showcase, it was a state of play. I was like, oh, okay, cool. This is a PlayStation game and they're bringing it day one. And then so I went to check out the game to find out more about it and then started realizing, wait a second, this isn't even made by PlayStation. And then to get this comment, it's like putting the two and two together. To me, it just looks bad. Like it just looks like they're like using this small studio almost. I mean, they totally like have this huge ad and not one time called up the studio. It just felt like they're using it to try to trick the, you know, the gamer, the buyer into like, look, no, we're doing it too. I didn't like it. It felt sleazy to me. So
on like the trailer at the very bottom in small letters, it does say
smile small
Blue 12 Studio published by Annapurna Interactive.
Okay, hold on. I'm going back to the trailer. Hold on one second here.
And it says under exclusive license.
Okay. So I'm back on it real quick. And I want to see how small here. You're saying at the very, very beginning, right?
No, at the end of the trailer.
Holy crap. At the end of the trailer, I mean, so unbelievably small and faint, there is no possible way anyone saw that. I mean, it's like a muted, it's not even like a bright text, it's a muted text, and it's tiny. It is tiny. Yeah. It is literally the, like, in the Santa Claus movie where they're telling him about the, like, print that is the border around the card, and he has to look at it with the microphone. He's like, huh? You know what I mean? Like,
well, so hang on. I guess I got to refute this a little bit. So I'm watching the whole trailer again.
Yeah, okay.
And about, let's see how many seconds into it. It's about 10 seconds into it.
Okay. I'm going to 7 seconds, clicking play.
Okay, so 12 seconds into it, they flash up the B12 logo in the middle of the screen, and then they flash up the Annapurna logo.
Okay.
And then the trailer continues.
18 seconds in. I missed that part. So it's not as tricky. It felt tricky because it was hidden between the big PlayStation reveal at the beginning and the PlayStation at the end, and I didn't notice it. So you're right. I saw that right there just now. It makes me feel a little bit better. It's not as sleazy, right? Yeah. So I take the sleazy part off. But I do feel like here he is saying, we can't do this because it makes us make good games, but we'll do it to yours.
Yeah. So I hear your point, and here's where I'm starting to kind of change a little bit of my feeling on this, because whilst what he says is very similar to what he said before,
yes,
it is subtly different in that, he's saying, if we were to change our model, if we were to change the way that we develop games and how we sell them,
mm-hmm.
he says, we feel that there is significant risk that the virtuous cycle that we've established would be compromised and potentially broken. So that's where the subtle difference, I think, in the language takes place, is that he's not necessarily saying anymore. The way it was said before is it kind of was linking the whole, if you did it a different way, it wouldn't work. Now he's kind of saying, if we change the way we've set things up, we feel that our cycle would be broken and we wouldn't be able to do it as well. So that's where I think the subtle difference in language makes me feel a little bit better about what he's saying here, and mm-hmm. where I get a little bit more sympathetic in that maybe the way their business model is currently, now maybe it can change over time, it can subtly change, and we've seen them change the way they view PC games over time. But the way I read this is that he's simply saying that right now, at this moment, it can't work. If we try to turn that switch tomorrow, that and I'm thinking about the fact that I don't think they have enough games. They don't have enough first party big AAA games that they could keep people subscribed to the service month to month to month to month. They'd end up in situations where people subscribe to the service for a month or two and play their games and then jump back out. And this is where I think Xbox is setting themselves up to be better positioned, because they're going after Activision and Blizzard, and they're developing games like Halo and Forza that are set up as service games. And so you keep people in your service because they want to keep playing those games, you know, with the Call of Duties and things like that.
I hear you. My argument's sake on that is, so if you're not releasing your top AAA games, you're saying that they're not doing it so that they don't run into people who subscribe and then unsubscribe. What the hell is going to keep them from doing it now? They definitely have no reason to be on long term. Like, I could get on, play the couple games that are on there that I, you know, have missed in the past, mm-hmm. and get right back off.
Right. And I think
I'm that, more inclined to do it now.
Yeah. I think that because they're not trying to heavily put their business revenue into the service, that's okay to them.
Okay.
And really and truly, if you look at PlayStation Plus, the basic tier is how you play online games. So if you are a Call of Duty player on PlayStation consoles, say, you of course still need the base tier of PlayStation Plus to continue playing online.
Sure.
So, and that's the same with Xbox Live. Sure. So anyway, that's where I'm kind of slightly changing my tune.
Okay.
In terms of how I feel about what he's saying. And I, for one, actually kind of like the idea of Stray coming to premium day one, because it's a smaller studio. Clearly, PlayStation had to go and pay them a bunch of money to be there. And it shows that PlayStation could still support premium with new, smaller games. And that's one of the things that I really, really love about Game Pass.
Right.
yes, the AAA games, yes, the Xbox exclusive games are there day one.
Right.
But Xbox also prop up a lot of indie developers.
And if PlayStation does that, that would be good. That was one of the things that we said that PlayStation is doing very, very good that makes the, or sorry, the Xbox is doing good that PlayStation doesn't have. So you're right. Right. If they equaled that, that would be good.
Yeah, I think that would lift up creativity from the smaller studios. It would lift up these independent developers a little bit more. And I think ultimately that could be good for them, the developer, I mean, the independent developers.
Right.
That's who them are, as well as the gamer. So that's, I'm going to take a slightly more positive take
on
it.
I'm with you on that.
So, all right, anything more to say here?
Nope, I might as well just fold right into the next one.
Yeah, because the next one, meanwhile, Take-Two Interactive CEO Strauss Zelnick has also had his say on day one focused subscription services in a new video interview with GamesIndustry.biz. Zelnick had the following to say, "We've supported various subscription services and we're happy to do so. Our skepticism has been around making frontline console products available day and date with subscription. That doesn't make any sense to us because, economically speaking, we don't think consumers are prepared to pay for that. Why would they? And we can't afford to turn our business upside down in a way that doesn't make sense economically. It can be potentially great for catalog properties. Those are properties that have been in the market for a while. If their price has been reduced, it can make economic sense to offer those on a subscription basis," end quote. And this is where I read this and I was like, huh, like PlayStation have more games for sure, but they still don't have the level of catalog that Xbox have built in terms of what the Xbox are trying to put in day and date in their service that could potentially keep people there month to month to month. And it makes even more sense when you think about Take-Two, because how many games has Take-Two have actually released in the last?
Exactly.
I mean, but it's like Red Dead and GTA 5,
right?
7 or 8 years ago, right?
Right.
So,
of course, it doesn't make sense for them. But the thing that, again, and I'm sounding very negative Nancy here, but the thing that I picked up on this that it kind of went like eyebrow raised a little bit is he made one, which, so I agree, it doesn't make sense for them specifically, right? But I had a raised eyebrow because he had a statement in here that I took as kind of a broad statement, right? Almost like a shot at an Xbox, right? Which was, our skepticism has been around making frontline console products available day with subscription. That doesn't make sense to us because, economically speaking, we don't think consumers are prepared to pay for that. So he's not saying that, like, to me, I read that as we don't think that's a successful model. Not that like it doesn't work for us. It doesn't make sense to us. We don't think that that is a smart way to do it. That's the way I read that, right?
Read it as because of what they offer, they would have to charge much more.
We don't think consumers are prepared to pay for that. Like, I think it was straight up we don't think this is a good decision. I didn't like read it as it's not good for us, because it's clearly not. But I took it more of the industry needs to stop this shit because it's bad for us. You know, it's bad for gaming. It's like y'all are, you know, causing problems. Quit it. That's what I took with this. I took it more as a shot.
Yeah. And you might be right. I took it more as what they would end up having to charge consumers on a monthly basis for it to work for them economically would be more than what regular consumers would want to pay.
And it's funny, Xbox gets all of the Xbox right now gets all of the press on this, right? Because they're the big boy, if you will, with Game Pass. But EA Play has been doing this longer than Xbox has. It was EA Access.
EA Play does not do day and date games, though.
You're telling me right now I can't go to EA Play and pay for EA Premium and get Madden and FIFA the day they come out on the service?
Yeah, so on PC you could do that, right?
Yeah,
it's the same with Ubisoft. It's the same.
Ubisoft is the next one.
Both of those companies have only done that on PC. Both of those companies have specifically not put those services on to consoles yet.
But it's for console games. They're games that are available on both console and PC.
What I'm saying is, if you look at EA Access on PC, you have the premium tier.
Uh-huh.
But if you look at EA Access on consoles, you do not have the premium tier.
Because it's just included in Xbox to Game Pass.
No, only the EA Access that's included in Game Pass is not the premium version of it.
I get that. I get that. What I'm saying is, to me, a big reason for that is Xbox controls that. Xbox doesn't want them to have a higher service that you're paying out to EA over the top of what is on Xbox.
Maybe, but EA Access existed on Xbox console before it ever was in Game Pass Ultimate, and it never had the Ultimate version.
That you're right on that.
So I'm curious about that because both Ubisoft and EA have explored a premium package on PC, but they've never brought that to consoles.
Mm-hmm. And how can it be successful for PC all this time, but they're like, oh, it can't work for console?
Well, who's saying it's successful on PC, though?
I mean, they're doing it.
Maybe they have, because they've been doing it for so long, maybe they have numbers that suggest that
it's not successful. So here I am as the PC gamer, I guess, is the side of me seeing it going like, all these people are doing it. Like, basically everyone has one. They're all doing it.
Yeah. And what I'm curious about is, then you have companies going
like, you can't do it.
So I'm curious is, EA does not launch their games on Steam, right?
Right.
Do Ubisoft launch their games on Steam?
Or do they
have a separate launcher?
No. Ubisoft has their own launcher. But like if you get the game on Game Pass or whatever, it like launches the Ubisoft launcher to launch the game. So you're like in a launcher that launches a launcher to launch the game. It's pretty weird.
So I'm curious if part of the reason why
Game Pass does that a little bit too on PC, like it'll launch the launcher.
I'm curious if, again, though, like, and I, because I've seen that Game Pass hasn't taken off well on PC either. I'm just curious if, like, PC gamers just in general are like, I'm going to go to Steam. I'm only going to go to Steam. I'll buy the games I want. If you're not going to put them there, then I'm not going to care.
And you may be right on that. There may be a large portion of PC gamers that maybe just don't even really know about Game Pass. Because even on PC, Game Pass is the best money in gaming. Like, it just is. Like, I get so much out of Game Pass. It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I know that these guys are looking at a lot of data sheets, a lot of money sheets, a lot of portfolios behind the scenes. They obviously would have access to data from EA Access Plus or whatever they call it and Ubisoft Plus. And how those have performed on PC. I don't know, man. I genuinely think that the way to make this work is the way Xbox is approaching it in terms of building a large catalog of studios that will release games into that surface, as well as focusing on games that are high retention value in things like Call of Duty, because then you keep people in that service.
Yeah.
And maybe that's where PlayStation's going and chasing these live service games.
Yeah, they're active. I mean, they're still trying to buy people. They've been active about that. So maybe they're just like, it doesn't work today, but at some point it will.
Yeah. So I don't know. We'll see. I mean, obviously, there are lots of opinions about subscription services. Me, kind of personally, I really like Game Pass, and I've said that many times on this show, and I would love a PlayStation Pass. But at the same time, I don't know. These companies have a lot of opinions on it, and they don't seem to want to do that right now. So I guess we'll kind of have to just wait and see.
When you say that, it's not that they don't want to do it. Everyone wants to do it. They just want to do it and get their other thing too.
Yeah.
Let's just want their cake. Because we've talked about what the financials are on these subscriptions and what it means to companies. They roll in dough for sure. Game Pass is making shitloads of money.
Well, they make it once, and this happened to Netflix too, right? Like it took Netflix a long time to get to profitability.
Sure.
And so that's the part that, you know, maybe a company like PlayStation can't afford the losses up to profitability.
Sure. Right. Disney Plus, like HBO Now, Paramount Plus. I mean, they're all moving to subscription because there is big money to be made in it.
Yep. All right, let's move on to number 5 because we still got quite a bit to go through. So number 5, Sony may release PlayStation VR 2 in the first quarter of 2023. This is according to tech industry analyst Ming-Chi Kuo, I think is how you say that.
Sure.
Who works at Hong Kong-based TF International Securities. He said, quote, My latest supply chain check suggests that the assembler and several component providers of PSVR 2 will start mass production with about 1.5 million units in the second half of 2022. Sony may launch it in Q1 23, depending on the development schedule of PSVR titles, end quote. It's worth noting also that Sony said last week that it will have more than 20 games ready for launch of PlayStation VR 2, and then they showcased four upcoming games for PSVR 2 in the State of Play this week. I'm inclined to believe this Q1 of 23 release.
So the comment I got there that I found interesting, and it's correct, is PlayStation could have units, but if the software is not ready, releasing with no titles would be bad for them. So they could technically have units ready and hold off to make sure that they have the titles to go with it. So that's interesting. Yeah, and fair.
I think that makes sense. Yeah. Are you at all interested in VR still? I know that you got that Quest.
Not really. It's a shtick, right? Like it's just
right.
There's just the games are just so, because they're so massive, there's no depth to them.
Right.
They're so short and small and like, I mean, you know, there's just no depth. It's, you know, you finish them quickly and it's like, now what?
Yep. And you're left, you know, looking for another.
And they're expensive ass games. Yeah. So, yeah. It's a shtick. It's fun. It's cool. It's different. But, to me, it's, As a legitimate avid gamer, I'm like not big into the VR.
Yeah, that's kind of where I've fallen. But new tech is always cool, so I'll be interested to see when we get more of a reveal on it and understand the price. All right, let's jump into these game announcements, and we've gotten a ton of them this week. Yeah. It is that time of the year.
So we may not spend much time on them, but...
Yeah. So here we go. Let's start working through them. Some of them, I think there's more to say, others less to say. I've tried to do these in order of when we're actually going to get the games so that chronologically speaking, in terms of a calendar, it kind of makes sense. All right. Number one, Ubisoft has confirmed plans to release a new update for Assassin's Creed Origins on June 2. From Thursday, players will be able to experience the 2017 release in 60 FPS when played on PS5 and Xbox Series X and S via backwards compatibility. Last August, Ubisoft added the same 60 FPS support for 2018's Assassin's Creed Odyssey on both of those consoles as well. So this is really interesting. I have been kind of holding off playing Origins because I knew this update was coming. So that's good. I like that they're supporting it. It's going to be a free update. If you own the game already, you'll have it. I appreciate that from Ubisoft. I think that's good to support those games. All right, and that's June 2nd. So as you're listening to the show, you can already go ahead and download that patch and play. All right, number two, the first Modern Warfare 2 trailer is out, and it confirms a June 8 full reveal. As a reminder, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 is due to release on October 28th of this year. Did you check out this trailer?
Yes, and the other thing I will say about Call of Duty has been really good with their marketing in the past, and they are doing it again this time around. In the past, you know, they've been really good about, they release you know, like commercials that have like movie stars and, you know, popular you know, like popular streamers and stuff in them, and they're doing it again this time around. I've seen a couple now that have like some basketball players, or that have Tim the Tatman is in one, and they're funny, they're good. So they do a good job of this. So there's the like main standard trailer, and then there's like little spinoffs of that with, like on trend people, right?
Yeah, they're very clever. They're very clever. So I don't know if we've kind of proclaimed it on this show, but definitely Mike and I have been talking about it, that we think we want to actually jump into this game day one and play the multiplayer of it. We were both huge Modern Warfare 2 original fans, whatever they, you, however you differentiate it now. And so we've decided we're going to try to give this one a shot. We're probably going to suck at it, but I'm definitely intrigued to see what this game is going to, you know, how it's going to appeal to those of us that were there back when its original predecessor released. I guess coming on 14 years ago now, I think it was a 2008 release.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll see. June 8th, next week, we'll get more information on this one. All right, number three. I think there's all we really need to say about this one, but I'll say it again. Stray, a game where players play as a cat in a neon-tinged city, will come to PC and PS5 on July 19th and will be included with PlayStation Plus Extra and Premium on day one. I think we've kind of said all there is to say on this one, yep. But anything yep. you want to add?
No, I mean, basically you're playing as a cat in... I can't think of the cyberpunk
like world. A cyberpunk yeah.
yeah yeah
it's intriguing that like there are no humans mm-hmm. and so it's just these cats that are left and these robots
yeah
so I'm intrigued a little bit by that. I'm not gonna lie, this didn't jump at me
either. But then when they cool.
yeah it does visually look really neat yeah. I will say that. All right, number four, and this was an announcement that I felt was like almost most exciting to me, even though I've already played these games. I'm pumped about
this because I've not played these games.
Yeah, but that's exactly why I'm so excited about how many new people can go and try these right. games. Marvel's Spider-Man and Marvel's Spider-Man Miles Morales will come to PC. I should have written this a little bit better.
Yeah, I know.
They will both be coming to PC. Marvel's Spider-Man will arrive on August 12th,
yeah.
whilst Miles Morales will arrive later in the fall. This was revealed during Sony's State of Play. The remastered version of the first game will be the first PC port developed by Nixxis since its acquisition by Sony. So that's really neat. The
I'm
first time we'll see that studio.
Because I've been, that's, it's, you know, of all of the PlayStation exclusive games, these two games are the two that have bummed me out the most.
I'm just going to call games.
It
now.
They are. They're the two that have bummed me out the most.
I love them so much. They're so good. And I'm so excited all the people that are going to get to play them now. No more excuses. Got to come check these games out.
Yeah.
Console's not in the way. Love them. And I love all the mods that we're going to get. I don't know if you saw.
Oh, yeah. PC. Once PC gets involved, you get a shitload yeah. of mods, man. Like,
so I don't know if you saw like the God of War, because God of War is now on PC.
Yeah.
And someone modded Master Chief's character model in for the for one of the character models that Kratos is fighting.
Yeah.
And so you got this whole fight scene that's just Kratos and Master Chief, and it's glorious. I love it. I think this is part of why PlayStation have resisted PC for a little while. But yeah, it's going to be great. It's going to be great. I love it. All right, number five, Madden NFL 23 received a new trailer this week with an official release date of August 19th for PS4, PS5, and Xbox One and Xbox Series X and S. Next-gen platforms will benefit from an all-new gameplay system called FieldSense, and the intention with it is to, quote, produce consistent, ultra-realistic gameplay and equip players with more control everywhere on the field, end quote. In addition, Franchise Mode, Face of the Franchise Mode, and Ultimate Team have all received notable improvements this year. I'm not a big Madden fan.
Me neither.
But I know there's a lot of Madden fans out there, so I wanted to go ahead and mention this one.
I mean, from the trailer, I can't tell what's different. Like,
yeah,
it looks like every Madden that's been out recently. I'm sure there's some tweaks or this or that, but I can't tell them from the trailer.
I'm sure people say that about FIFA games, and yet sure. I know what's different.
It's exactly right. I do play Madden, but I'm not like huge on it. The yeah. only other shout out I'll say here that I think is cool is that John Madden will be on the cover.
Yeah, that's
after his passing,
neat.
They're going to have John Madden back on the cover of this game instead of it being the athletes like they always do.
Yeah, that's pretty dope for sure. All right, number six, THQ Nordic has announced that Destroy All Humans 2 Reprobed will launch on August 30th on PC, PlayStation 5, and Xbox Series X and S. Notably, it is next-gen only, or current-gen only, I should say. Destroy All Humans 2 Reprobed is a remake of the PlayStation 2 and original Xbox game that was released back in 2006. It takes place 10 years after the first game and follows Crypto 138 as he stops the KGB from destroying the Furon mothership with a nuclear missile. I didn't play these two games when they originally came out on PlayStation 2, but I did play the Destroy All Humans 1 remake, and I platinumed it actually. And these games are, well, at least the first one is really, there's humor here yeah. from like our childhood right. that is fantastic, and I'm surprised they were able to re-release this game with all of the same humor in it. So I loved it. I thought it was really fun, really silly, goofy game. I will definitely be checking this one out. Like I said, I platinumed the first one. All right. Number seven, Tunic, the Zelda-inspired adventure game from developer Finji, will release for PS5 and PS4 on September 17th. I played this game earlier this year. Very much a Zelda-inspired game. Yep. I really liked it right up until that like weird boss gauntlet at the end, and I just was like, I couldn't do it. It was way too difficult. But yeah, this is a fantastic little game, and I'm glad that it's coming to PlayStation consoles.
Yep.
All right, number eight, Pokemon Scarlet and Pokemon Violet have received a new trailer this week, which announced a release date of November 18th, 2022. The trailer showed new Pokemon, including the two new legendary Pokemon, which are called Coraidon and Mirrodon. I don't even know how to say these damn names anymore. It has also been confirmed that Pokemon Scarlet and Violet will let up to four players explore an open world together freely. So I watched this trailer, and I was like, I really don't like how this game sounds. Like, the sounds that come at you as, like, Pokemons are attacking each other and they throw out Pokeballs, I've realized I just don't like the way it sounds. I couldn't get over it. And I know that it's very similar to a lot of previous Pokemon games, and I think that this was, like, the first time it just clicked to me that I think the reason I don't like playing Pokemon games is just the fucking sounds. Like, just whatever that, like, almost slot machine sounds that are just spewing at you. So, I just couldn't.
I didn't notice that specific, but I'll just tell you, it'll be interesting to me at what point, because I'm there, at what point others are there to have some Pokemon fatigue. They have been pumping out these Pokemon games after another, and I'll just tell you, dude, like, what's different between these games?
Yeah,
like, they're it's the same damn story almost. It's the same damn Pokemon. It's the same, like, I'm like, I've got Pokemon fatigue, man. Like, I'm not gonna buy this next one. I mean, no desire.
We've already got a Pokemon game this year. Pokemon Arceus released in January.
Yes. And there was one right before that, and there was one right before that, and I'm just like, I'm Pokemon'd out, man. Like, I just can't.
It's crazy. Yep. But if that's what you're up for,
it was Sword and Shield, November 18th. And there was Pokemon Snap, and there's Pokemon. You know, I'm just like, I can't do it.
They did the Diamond Pearl remakes.
Yeah.
All right. Number nine, The Callisto Protocol, the upcoming horror game from Dead Space creator Glenn Schofield, will release for consoles and PC on December 2. This was shown at the State of Play. Very much a callback to Dead Space, which makes sense considering it's from the guy who created it in the first place.
Yep.
This game looks dope, but is definitely not my style of game.
Not mine either.
I can't do it, but it looks super dope. And so I'm excited for the people that do enjoy these types of survival horror shooter games.
Yep.
Number 10, we're almost there. We're almost there. Number 10, Capcom officially announced a remake for Resident Evil 4 during this week's PlayStation State of Play. It will release on March 24th. 2023 with PlayStation 5, Xbox Series X and S, and PC via Steam. The game will also support PlayStation VR 2, which was a neat little announcement. According to Capcom, Resident Evil 4 Remake will preserve the essence of the original game while, quote, introducing modernized gameplay, a reimagined storyline, and vividly detailed graphics, end quote. Jason, what were your thoughts on this one?
Remake, you know, it's definitely not like a remaster or whatever. It's a bit more in line with kind of like a Final Fantasy VII remake, right? Like, so I thought it was interesting. Yep. I think it's cool. Again, Resident Evil's not my thing. I thought it was cool.
It was not a game series that I played growing up, but Resident Evil 8, I really liked, and I got a little bit more vibes of like Resident Evil 8 from this one than. And obviously, I get that Resident Evil 8 came out after Resident Evil 4. Please don't write in. I get it. But that's just the only one that I've played so far. But in terms of the vibes of that game versus the vibes of like Resident Evil 7.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I was kind of intrigued by this one. I really like there's a scene where he's in the car and you can see the reflection of his face in the window. And then he looks at the picture and he's kind of turning the picture and you can see the way the light moves over the sheen of the picture, and I was like, holy shit, that looks really good. I didn't expect to see that kind of level of graphical fidelity in a Resident Evil game, but this is a current gen console only, so maybe they're able to use the power of these consoles a little bit more. Intrigued. I'm a little bit intrigued. We'll see. March 24th. Let's see if they actually hit that date, though. High or low on that one? Do you think they'll make it?
I don't know.
It's so hard to tell anymore. It really is. All right. Number 11, Capcom also debuted the first Street Fighter VI gameplay during this week's PlayStation State of Play, which confirms that the sequel is set to include a single-player adventure mode. The gameplay trailer confirmed a 2023 release window on PlayStation consoles, Xbox consoles, and PC, and that it will contain three distinct game modes, including Fighting Ground, World Tour, and Battle Hub. Fighting Ground focuses on the classic game experience, fighting game experience, with modes from previous games in the series, such as arcade, online matches, training, local versus, etc. World Tour is described as a, quote, immersive single-player story experience, end quote, that, quote, pushes the boundaries of what a fighting game is and allows players to leave their own legacy with their own player avatar, end quote. Did you see that part of the trailer? I was like, I was like, oh, this is Street Fighter. And then the dude was like walking around and like interacting with people. And I was like, oh, maybe it's not Street Fighter. I don't know. And then it was definitely Street Fighter. That is strange.
So what it feels like to me is, have you ever played like NBA 2K?
No, but I see where you're going with this.
Like, it feels like we're like, you're wandering around and like you go to like the office or you go to like the gym to play or you go to, you know, your apartment. Mm-hmm. It feels a little more like that. Or I guess the better way to do it, it almost feels like old school Final Fantasy, in that like you're wandering the world, but then like boom, it pops up and then like loads you to another screen, and then you're in the like combat. Like it's like you're wandering around and just doing things, but then like you go to a spot and that's when it and loads in and it goes to the like to now you're gonna fight. So it's an interesting take, and I can see games this having an effect on like as soon as I saw that, what I thought was, man, you know what game would be even better to do this with that could really, really evolve because of the way they tell their story is Injustice.
Yeah, I could see it. I don't know. Now that you mentioned the 2K thing, I really feel like that's probably what this is in line with, like that 2K story mode. When I first saw this, I thought about, did you ever play Mortal Kombat Shaolin Monks? Oh, yeah. So that's what I thought about when I saw this. And I remember playing that one and really loving that sort of branch off from the fighting game genre.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, if they did something kind of more along that line in the Street Fighter universe, and that was kind of like the side thing, and you could still do all the fighting the way you want to, the way people normally play those games for, I feel like that would be really cool, but I think it's much more along the 2K.
Right. Well, NBA and 2K and that's thing. Where the hub, I think the hub is just like the like common grounds for the world tour, where you go and that's where all the other people are at, and you can walk up to them and click to people and view their stuff and, you know, skins or whatever, and talk and challenge people to duels or whatever. Like, I feel like the tour and hub are almost the same thing. It's just the hub is going to be like you load into a server where now everybody's at. It's like multiplayer, like it's the little like there'll be like a room where you can walk around and interact with some things in, and everyone else is there.
Yeah, I think you're quite correct. But yeah, I mean, if people listening don't know or have seen Mortal Kombat Shaolin Monks, it's this crazy different Mortal Kombat game where you have this multi-directional combat system where players like they can attack enemies that surround them more fluidly. So it's almost like a beat 'em up game, like one of those like you know, Battletoads or something like that. It's almost like that. But then there are also these more like specific like boss fight type things, and you can still perform like fatalities, and it kind of will shift to this view of where it looks more like what you expect a fighting game to be. And there's kind of like this whole story there And there's, you know, a campaign that you play through, rather than just, you know, fight the ladder or whatever. It was really neat. I've never seen them do anything else like it, but this game apparently, so it came out in 2005 for the original Xbox and PlayStation 2. So yeah, that's a bit of history for all you nerds out there. Go check it out and, see what random shit that I remember from my past. All right. Anything else to say there, Jason?
Nope.
All right. Number 12, a new trailer for Final Fantasy 16 has shown off more gameplay from the upcoming RPG, as well as confirming a summer 23 release window. The game appears to feature large scale battles with massive summons battling high above the city. Producer Naoki Yoshida added, quote, "The team under direction of Hiroshi Takai has entered the final leg of development and is focused on polish as they continue their march towards master up and launch," end quote. So it really does feel like this game is on its final stage, and that summer 23 release window is probably very accurate for this one. What were your thoughts on this trailer? I was like, what is this? Is this like Street Fighter in the middle of like Game of Thrones? Like, I was very confused.
Yeah, it doesn't in this trailer. Like a Final Fantasy to me. You know what I mean? Like, it's funny you say Game of Thrones. It has more of a, you know, it feels like Final Fantasy is definitely, for the most part, always tried to go futuristic, right? And this feels like, you know, it looks like Final Fantasy. It has Final Fantasy vibe of, you know, powers and abilities and summons, right?
Yeah.
But it looks like it's in, you know, medieval times almost, right? Like, it definitely, you know, there's like kings and their like armor looks different. So it looks weird to me. It's also not nearly as bright as most of the Final Fantasies are, as far as like, there's not these like beautiful bright skies. Everything is more like kind of has that medieval, like, dark times, kind of cloudy, foggy, almost like this is taking place in London, right? And not like,
right.
So it's different. And I don't know if I like it or not. I can't tell.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I'm looking at this one scene and it looks almost like straight out of one of the early levels of Dark Souls. You know, it's strange. And then they have these fights where, like, it literally looks like it's just two characters and they've got like health bars like you'd see in a fighting game up in the top of the screen. It's really strange. I don't know, man. I don't know if this one's really for me. It's going to really depend on when it releases and what's around it and whether or not I'm playing other things, whether or not I give this a shot. I mean, I'm sure that there are fans that are just thrilled with this. And I genuinely am excited for you. Just, this one is not doing it for me. I'm not jumping off my seat, but, you know, I was a definite nope on Ghostwire Tokyo, and then the game came out and I gave it a shot and I loved it. So who knows? Who knows? Anything else to say on this one?
Nope.
All right, we're almost there. Two more. Number 13, the first Sonic Frontiers gameplay has been revealed via a new teaser trailer. The trailer's release precedes a series of greater reveals, including gameplay and developer interviews, which will be published on IGN starting June 1st, or already as you're listening to the show. Set for release in holiday of 2022 for Xbox consoles, PlayStation consoles, Switch, and PC, Sonic Frontiers looks set to be Sega's most ambitious series entry in years, featuring open-world level design as players battle enemies and explore the Starfall Islands, including forests, waterfalls, deserts, and more. what I noticed with this trailer is like how much pop-in was happening in this trailer. This is like your first look trailer, and I saw a lot of pop-in with this game. I saw stuff that wasn't quite working right in the trailer. And so I'm just a little bit concerned if this is supposed to be a holiday 2022 release on this one. There's quite a lot of polish that has to happen.
When
here.
You say pop in, I guess I'm not, what are you talking about?
Like where you're looking and all you can see is the sky. And then all of a sudden the like structure appears.
Oh yeah. No. You're right. Now that you point that out, I see that too. Yeah. It's like, that's exactly right. Yeah. It's like, it's showing, it's not rendering things out far enough and the rendering is happening, as he's running around. Right now, you know, it's Sonic, right? So let's say in theory, like he's hauling ass, right? So he's in an open world and he's going quickly. So maybe there's some of that, but because the detail of the world looks good, but you're right. There's definitely a lot of pop-in happening because there's stuff off in the distance that it can't quite render, and it's trying to like catch up.
Yeah, like what is noticeable to me is like the moment they like go to like do it's like a whole structure. Like yeah. If you look at the game, for those of you out there, if you go and check this out, there's a like a first gameplay trailer on the IGN website, and there's sort of like an opening like 40 seconds to this, and then on about second 42, it actually goes to gameplay. And it's just right behind Sonic, and he starts to move in the open world. And you look out there, and it's just like it's just sky, and he's only walking. So this is before he even like starts sprinting, and like all of a sudden, a whole structure just appears where there was nothing. Right. And I'm like, oof! Like that's right at the start of your trailer.
Right. I agree. Like if you go to the end where he's like sprinting through the forest and stuff, it's way more impressive looking. I'm surprising. I agree. It's surprising they didn't start with that.
Yeah.
Rather than start off right off the bat with like, look, we can't render fast enough. But the positive I'll say here is it does look like it's not like one of these where, you know, we've seen so many times where games come out, you know, like Anthem was one of those that came out and looked so incredibly impressive and is quote unquote gameplay, but it's not gameplay that's ever actually going to be, you know, I mean, it's like the dumbed down. It's almost a cinematic of gameplay, right? It's not really actual gameplay that will ever hit a console. This at least feels like it's probably legitimately the game, right? Like it is actual gameplay. Yeah, there's a pro there, you know what I mean? Because I've played a ton of games on PC that do this, right? Like as you're doing stuff, they're rendering things in the world. You know, Ark is one of those that has this huge expansive world, and there's a shit ton of content and things for it to load. And so it's not like on PC, I've never seen this before, but I didn't even notice it until you pointed it out. Yeah. And now I can't unsee it.
I'm watching this one set and he's like running across this thing and the sign's not there. And then all of a sudden the sign just appears in front of him, the little white sign.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh shit. But no, I will say though that like looking at this, I think it's kind of cool how they've managed to, oh my gosh, there's another piece that was so bad to pop in. It's so distracting. So
as far as the gameplay goes, it looks like better graphics as far as like the detail of like the grass and stuff like that. It looks like a better graphics version of a lot of these, you know, like Mario Odyssey and stuff, right? Like that's what it feels like to me.
Yeah, I can see that. I definitely can. I guess the only other final thought I have is it does look like they've really sort of captured the idea of just like the sort of crazy running, sprinting, collecting coins vibe of the 2D plane in a 3D world. And I think that's cool. I think if you're a Sonic fan, this probably looks pretty fun.
My kid will like
and
it.
I think my kids will like this one. I think they're going to really enjoy it. Yeah. So I don't want to dog on it too hard. It's just the pop-in is very distracting.
Yeah.
And it's kind of odd that your sort of world gameplay trailer here is got so much of that going on.
Yeah. But
all right, last one, number 14, the upcoming Dragon Age 4 title has finally officially been revealed by BioWare, and it will be titled Dragon Age Dreadwolf. The announcement statement added that a reveal of the game will come later this year. So if you're a Dragon Age fan, you finally have a title. BioWare need this game to hit for them big time. For sure. You were just talking about them and Anthem.
Yeah. This is the one that they're not using Frostbite, right? They're using Unreal.
I hope not. I hope they use like a proper RPG engine rather than Frostbite.
I'm pretty sure that
for first person shooters.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that they're using like Unreal on this.
That would be a good choice.
But I've just not been a fan of the Dragon Age series, man. Like I've tried it. And the problem is I tried it after Skyrim. And so I'm like, yeah, this sucks.
Yeah. I've only played one of them, and I wasn't a giant fan of it. I played the most recent Dragon Age Inquisition.
Yeah.
And I wasn't a giant fan of it. All right, that's it. That's all the news roundup, I guess. Yep. Upcoming releases, June 2, Diablo Immortal, which we already talked about on the show. That is already out. June 8th, Ms. Marvel Episode 1. That's the next Disney Plus Marvel show. So next week, you can check that out. June 10th, we've got Mario Strikers Battle League and The Quarry. So Switch users getting their game. And then The Quarry is for those that liked drawing a blank on it now, Until Dawn, so your sort of party horror games. June 21st, Fall Guys is coming to Xbox One and Switch. You can play that obviously on PC and PlayStation already, but this is the Xbox. So
on PC, on all platforms, it's moving to free to play now. So okay. It exists on PC today, but you have to pay for it. So gotcha. Starting June 21st, it's going to a free to play model.
Gotcha. Okay.
And, I just knew that I think it has full crossplay. So you can play on Xbox and then turn around and go to PC and be on your same account. Like what Fortnite good. Is. Yeah. Right.
I like it. All right. Number 23 is Sonic Origins. That's the re-release of the first three Sonic games. That'll be on PC, PlayStation consoles, Xbox consoles, and Switch. June 24th, Capcom Fighting Collection on PC, PS4, Xbox One, and Switch. Also June 24th, Fire Emblem Warriors Three Hopes on Switch. June 30th, Monster Hunter Rise Sunbreak on Switch and PC. And finally on June 30th, also Cuphead, The Delicious Last Course on PC, PlayStation, Xbox One, and Switch. It's a big month for Switch players. Getting Mario Strikers Battle League, getting Fire Emblem Warriors and Monster Hunter Rise Sunbreak, as well as some other games coming to the platform. So if you're a Switch player, big month for you. All right, free games. June's PlayStation Plus games have been announced. They'll be available starting June 7th. Nickelodeon All-Star Brawl, God of War, and Naruto 2 Boruto Shinobi Striker are your June games. June's Xbox games with gold have been announced, and I just can't be bothered to actually go over them. They're games that you probably don't want to play, but if you have an interest, they're out there, they're announced, and some of them are already available. The next free Epic Game Store title will be Wolfenstein The New Order. If you have not played that and you play on PC, please go check that game out. It is a superb first-person shooter campaign. Highly recommend that one, and it is free to grab on Epic Store. And then, of course, Amazon's June games are also out there. We've already talked about them, but Far Cry 4, Escape from Monkey Island, Astro Legaster, Across the Grooves, Coleco, and WRC 8 are their June games. Finally, Game Pass. Some announcements there. So For Honor, Marching Fire Edition, and Ninja Gaiden Master Collection are available on the service as you're listening to the show already. And then next week on June 7th, Assassin's Creed Origins, which is just getting that 60 FPS boost, Chorus, Disc Room, and Space Lines from the Far Out are being added to the service June 7th. So there you have it. Those are your Game Pass games. That is it. That's the show. A lot to cover, but I think we covered it well. And just going to be lots more announcements next week. So it's exciting times. Some as good a gamer. Shows.
Yep.
All right. Any final words before we get out of here?
No, man. Just going to be a good week next week.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm very excited, culminating in that Xbox showcase. All right, my final parting words is don't forget, if you want to have your top 20 favorite games included in our episode 100, you got about a week or so to submit those to us, and we'll add them in to the Matrix. But yeah, you can't put them at the last minute. You got to give me a little bit of time to fold it all together. So maybe about another week to 10 days to submit your top 20 favorite games. All right. Thank you everyone for listening to the 98th episode of the TriCast Gaming Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. Remember, like, subscribe, review on your podcasting app of choice. If you have any questions for the show, DM us on Twitter or Facebook. We'd be happy to read those out. The show will be back again next Friday with episode number 99. We creep ever closer to 100. Have a great weekend. Stay safe and game hard.